give a warm hand for Chris Raymer.
Well now, good morning. I wish English sounded as nice as, you know, this Icelandic dialect. You know, this is great stuff. Some of you women ought to catch on to this. You know, in America, you know, little phone. Well, never mind. We'll talk about that later. It's great to be here, guys. I'm actually not as old as I appear this morning. I walked off a curb last night going to dinner and like to busted my ass. So I got a busted foot this morning. So it's going to work against me all day long because I can't outrun any of you anymore. You know, so the slowest guy that wants to beat me over the head today is going to be able to do it. And I think some of you after our talks are going to want to do that. And so I can speak for myself and the other speakers that are going to speak this morning, and my brother Myers and my good friend Peter from New York, and I'll get a chance to visit with you some more tonight at 9 o'clock if I'm still alive after this morning. And we're not representing Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to tell you, you know, I work for a treatment center in the States, and I'm certainly not representing that hospital. We're three guys that have recovered from alcoholism and drug addiction, and we come up here to share a little bit with you. And some of you cats in this room, it's like preaching to the choir. So many of y'all have been through the work, and you understand. Basically, we're going to be repeating what you already know, and so we're going to talk to you about this. Some of you guys, anything we say is going to piss you off, and I love you, and it's nothing personal. You know, you don't have to agree, but some of you have a tendency to want to make it very personal, you know, because my sponsor said this or my sponsor said that, you know. I just need to tell you, you know, I don't give a good, you know, what your sponsor said. I think sometimes we get a little out there. If it works for you, keep doing it. You know, I got a friend of mine in Kerrville that says that in at the hospital. She says, you know, if it's working, geez, just keep doing it. You know, if you're staying sober, doing it a completely different way, that's cool. And if your interpretation of the big book is different than ours, and bop till you drop. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there dying. Can you hand me that stack of stuff right there? I've drawn a couple little things up here, and I'm going to talk for about 30 minutes about a thing that's pretty near and dear to me. And our primary purpose, one of the problems. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, I need to tell you, saved my life. I'm here today because I walked into a room full of a bunch of drunks finally in 1987 after a suicide attempt up in Lewisville, Texas. And there's a bunch of people that I don't know if they loved me so much or if they were just tired of listening to my bullshit. You know, cut to the chase and told me what. We know is the truth today, which is the steps. AA saved my life, but AA nearly killed me before it saved my life. Because I'm going to a bunch of meetings. You know, we laugh about it around here and around the States. You know, these dark tunnel meetings where you go in and you, it's no telling what you're going to hear in these meetings. And a lot of people think that that's perfectly acceptable. And I'm here to tell you, it's not acceptable. And I think if the sooner all of us get on the same page, the better it's going to be for a lot of hurting people out there that need this solution. There is a way we can recover, folks. That means the obsession to use is going to be lifted from us. Treatment center crap tells us that we're always going to be recovering. And I'm going to tell you, if you're introducing yourself as a recovering alcoholic, you might want to finish the steps. You know, it's just a thought. And then you can join the rest of us, you know, in recovery, because it's a pretty cool place to be. It's a neat. I'm around the fellowship for 7 years, guys, and nobody will tell me that you can wake up in the morning and not think about alcohol or drugs. You don't wake up and think about it all day long. You don't miss it. It's just that the obsession to use is lifted from you. And I'm sure there are guys and girls in this room right here that are still. God dang, I wish I had a joint this morning. You know, geez, I wish I had a stiff one before I went, you know. And it's like, that's not recovered. And if you're still there, you're going to benefit from this weekend. You're going to have a hoot with this. And maybe we can motivate you to do some things on your own behalf to get connected to God. Because the spiritual experience is real, and we're going to talk about that this morning. So I just want to tell you, one of the things that we've done in our fellowships, I was talking to a a gentleman that has spoken here before from the States, and he was implying that some of our statistics that we talk about are incorrect. He's one of these old timers that believes that everything is perfectly okay in AA, and that everything's as good now as it ever has been. And any moron can just look around a little bit and say, any of you guys that have been around this fellowship longer than 6 months have watched hundreds of people come to the fellowship, turn right around, and go right back out again. Now, they didn't do that in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. In 1939, when our big book was published, this ought to confuse the hell out of some of you. This is a big book. Maybe not by Texas standards, but this is the 164 pages, and this is what I'm going to be carrying. But when this thing was published in 1939, we had a success rate around this country, around in the United States. Around the Midwest, we had almost 100% success rate. In the early days, 39, 40, 41 statistics, in any archive you look at, even the forward to the second edition will verify the stats. 65 to 70% of the people coming into our fellowship were getting sober and staying sober for a year. You'll follow us? That's some pretty good statistics. Right now in the United States, we got these statistics out of Dallas, and this is from the Dallas Intergroup. Y'all know what Intergroup is. Y'all have one here. They sell the little chips and little tokens. We've been monitoring these statistics since 93 was the first time I looked at these stats, and they've stayed the same for all this time until 2003. These are 2002 figures. Intergroup in Dallas sold 24, and this is not scientific. I mean, just ballpark it, but they sold 24,480 Desire chips. Y'all with me? 24,480 Desire Chip. Y'all know the little plastic tokens that we give you cats. I picked up a million of them, you know? I used to make necklaces out of them. It was just... We still see them at conferences, people carrying around. Like, what do you think? It's a badge of honor to be such a slipper? You know, I don't know. You mullet? Okay. Now look how it goes. One month, 6,123. You know, the little red tokens, they stayed sober 30 days, folks. We sold 6,123 of those little babies. That's 25%. It dropped straight down. Let me just cut to the chase. 1 year tokens, 1,625. That's 6% in Dallas, Texas. Guys, best case scenario that anybody can come up with in New York is about 20% success rate in AA today, worldwide. 20% people coming through the door. Now, how did we take a perfectly good program and in 67 years drop it through the toilet? I tell you how we did it. We had a lot of well-meaning people try to improve this program that was already working perfectly well. A lot of people put their own spin on it, you know, and I it drives me crazy. Meyer sent me this article years ago, and I've kept it. Y'all ever hear of moderation management? I don't know if it ever caught on here. It never actually caught on anywhere, but it got because it killed a lot of people. You know, it got a lot of press out there. You know, it was for hard drinkers. Moderation. Let's forget this staying sober forever. Let's just learn to moderate. Which sounded like a hell of a fine idea to me. You know, I mean, okay. If I can't drink 6 quarts a day, I'll drink 1 quart. How's that? You know, but see, if I could pull that off as an alcoholic, if I could guarantee that all I could drink was going to drink was one and pull it off every time, then I'm not even an alcoholic. And that's what, here's what this moderation management, they came up with this book called The Miracle Method. This is good. You remember it? Yeah. Myers is groaning over here. He can remember it. It says, here's the line that leads into it. This is a book review, guys. You can see it up here. It's a book review. It says, the Alcoholic Anonymous tenet that recovery takes forever didn't make sense to these specialists in brief therapy from Milwaukee. I could go on and read it. It won't take your time. What I wanted you to see is this. Since Alcoholics Anonymous's belief that recovery takes forever. Now, where did they get that? They didn't get it from this book. So where did they get it? They got it sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, listening to people like us talk about shit we didn't know anything about. Recovery does not take forever. Guys, recovery does not take forever. Recovery takes just as long as it takes you to pull your head out of your ass and finish these steps. That's how long it takes. I mean, this is real simple stuff. This is not rocket science. But I'm saying we're responsible. Everybody wants to take shots at Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, we're a punchline halfway around the world. We're a punchline to damn party jokes, you know, alcoholics. And we've done it to our own selves by allowing this misinformation to be talked about. You with us? Here's the reason. We don't have the traditions in here on the wall, but most of you guys, if you've got a little book, you can read them. In the back of your books, I'm sure you've got the traditions. Tradition 5, it says, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the still suffering alcoholic. Dig, long form sin's the same thing. They didn't add anything to it. We have one primary purpose. Yes? Did I misread that? Let me see. No, guys, we have one primary purpose. And see, this is, I want to talk to you a little bit about this drawing up here because we're going to keep referring to this throughout the morning. At least I will. Speaking in tongues already, isn't this? It'll be Icelandic tongues here. This is. Here. What does Tradition 3 say? Tradition 3 says the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. How many of you guys ever in an AA meeting and started talking about drugs and some old-timer stop you? Any of you guys? Oh, they don't do that in Iceland. Let me tell you, don't do it in the United States. They'll stop you in a heartbeat. Y'all follow us? Because we've got a singleness of purpose thing that says that we're here to talk about alcohol. You with us? They don't have any problem in the world kicking a drug addict out of an AA meeting if they break the tradition. You follow me? That's the third tradition. Now let's go to the fifth tradition, two down, and it says we got one primary purpose. So you come in here and want to talk about your stupid freaking divorce one more time. You want to whine a little while, piss and moan about the, I'm having such a tough... I've twisted my ankle last night and I got... And see, and I can sit up here for an hour and talk to you about this busted up ankle of mine, you know, and then what are we going to do? You know, I'm going to elicit a little sympathy, and I'm going to certainly feel better having shared my pathetic life with you. And then while y'all spend the rest of the morning cleaning up the mess that I've just made, you know, there's some poor alcoholic in the back that's not going to hear the message of hope because we didn't talk about our primary purpose. And I'm going to tell you something, guys. Nothing drives me more crazy. I think if we had success rates back where we had... even as high as 30 years ago, if we had success rates that were back there, I'd say, hey, we've done such a great job with the alcoholic problem. Let's take on marital problems. Let's take on your stupid legal problems. Let's take on any problem that we can possibly help you with. Let's do that. But guys, our history is fraught with people in the past that have tried to do that. We got our information a gazillion years ago from the Washingtonians. I don't have the statistical stuff up here for it, but at one particular time at the height of the Washingtonian movement, there was over 150,000 drunk sober worldwide in this movement. It was tremendous. There was a lot of people getting well. And what did the Washingtonians do? They screwed it up by trying to get into everything else under the sun except trying to help drunks. You with us? You'd think the Oxford movement that picked up those tenets from the Washingtonians would have learned the lesson, but they didn't. We had... close to 500,000 at one time, alcoholic sober in the Oxford movement. People, temperance movement, signing pledges, staying sober, kicking butt, taking names. And what did the Oxford movement do? They decided to go south with it too. Now let's take on the politicians and let's take on every other problem in the world. And all of a sudden, what happened? The whole thing fell apart. You'll have a tough time finding the Oxford movement anywhere anymore. So Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, when they got together, they said, listen, let's don't louse this up. Let's don't try to fix the world. We got a tough enough battle with the most deadly disease on earth. Let's just try alcoholism, huh? I mean, let's do one thing well. That's why they put it in the traditions, folks. And I tell you, us as a fellowship have taken those traditions and basically thrown them up in the air. And that's why our success rates suck. We're going to talk about it some tonight when I get a chance to share with you again, folks. There's so much documented evidence about what happened in the past and what's happening today in our fellowships, and we got to take it back. One of the things that we're not doing, we're going to talk about it again harder later on this morning. We're not qualifying the drunk. We're not qualifying the alcoholic and addict and making sure they understand that they're in the right room. We're not helping them, and we don't have time to help them because we're too busy taking care of your problems. How many of you in this room have ever wanted... We'll see how many honest people we've got in this room. How many of you in this room have ever gone into a meeting and talked about your screwed up day? Good. Welcome. By God. Hey, Peter, raise your hand, Peter. Dang, I tell you. We all do it, and we've all done it, and nothing I'm going to say from the podium is going to stop, but it may slow some of you down just a bit. We've got this idea that it's perfectly okay for me to go into a meeting and share anything I want, and that is exactly opposite of what the tradition says. I want y'all to stick with me for 15 minutes, and I'm going to talk to you about this right over here on this little board right here, and then we'll give these guys a chance to visit about this just a little bit. You see this guy... this little stick figure guy, this is Issue Man. I want to introduce you. Y'all heard me talk about it on tapes. I got some little pins up here. They look like these little pins right here. And it's got a little stick figure guy. He's got a little issue man on here. And this is issue man. Listen, ladies, don't feel slighted. I've got an issue woman coming out, too. I said, you can draw some little boobies on these if you want to, but... Issue man. And see, at the top of this thing, we've got body, mind, and spirit. And that's the three parts of the program, and three parts of this. We've got a three-part disease and a three-part solution. And that's what this circling triangle is about. You got three sides to this triangle, and the recovery's on the bottom, and the unity and the service. And as long as we stay in those three parts, it treats these three parts of the disease. And that's what our book tells us about. And that's our primary purpose, to explain to the newcomer what that's about. Peter did a great job last night discussing this business. If I stay in all three parts, I'm going to stay sober. And I don't give a rat's butt what happens out there. I'm going to stay sober because I'm going to have some real power in my life. And we don't have time to talk to the newcomer about this because we're too busy trying to be junior therapists in our meetings. And I'm telling you guys, the crap's got to stop. I think therapy's great. I would just prefer to go to a professional to get my advice. It's the most unbelievable thing to walk into an AA meeting and listen to a room full of guys sitting around talking about relationships. Why in the hell would I want to come to the sickest place on earth? Because I've had 1,000 relationships, I think I'm qualified to talk about them. You know, what is this? What's wrong with it? Chris, why do you have so many relationships? Because I'm not good at it. You know, we were laughing last night. If I'm with you a week, listen, I was looking at some of you girls last night. I already have our children named. Y'all think I'm kidding? This is nuts. I got to tell you. I'm going to go home and get Patty. I have a girlfriend in Texas waiting. She's from New York. That's where I met Peter. And I'm going to teach this. I'm going to pitch her on learning Icelandic. You know, this language. I don't know what she'll say, but it'll sound good anyway. You see the little X's outside issue man down here? And these are your issues. And that's why this little guy's called issue man. And every one of us in this place, we come into hospitals, we come into these places, our rooms, and we're full of issues, right? All God's kids got troubles. Y'all know this, the old song. And that's exactly what this is about. I spent years, I'll talk about it more tonight, but I spent years believing that my problems out there somehow affected my drinking and drugging. And there's a bunch of you in this room that still believe they do. And you're destined to fail. You're destined to drink again if you don't get this one piece clear. My drinking is about a thing called a spiritual experience and a physical allergy. Look at the top piece, this physical piece, my body. When I drink alcohol, my body lights up like a sponge, and it says, I want more. Y'all with us? The phenomena of craving kicks in, and I can't guarantee you how much I'm going to drink. Now, that's the problem without a doctor's opinion talks about it. That's the problem with alcoholics. Guys, the problem is not that you drank a couple of beers. The problem is that you try to drink every freaking beer in Iceland. Isn't that right? The problem is not that you smoked a little pot. You tried to smoke a bale of that shit. See? And that's what we got to get down. What happened, though? Well, you started using this stuff, and you started... There was something physically different in your body that makes you separate from other people. Other people can have a couple of drinks. How come you? You can't. See? Because you're wired different. So the physical piece is one piece, and then we couple it with this thing called a mental obsession that tells you that you don't have a choice, that it's time to go drink. It makes it virtually impossible to remember the consequences of a week or a month ago. How many of you guys ever got arrested? Y'all are just bored shit on Iceland, aren't you? All you got to do is go get arrested. I don't have anything else to do Saturday night. Let's go get arrested. I can tell you I've talked from 1,000 podiums and I've never seen that many hands go up. That's good. I wish we had a picture of that. That's good shit. That's good shit. I certainly feel at home now, I guarantee you. All right, but guys, how many of you got arrested and then a week later you got arrested again? Or you were out there drinking again? I mean, it was the same hands up. It's like, what, are you new? You can't learn from your mistakes? That's the problem with alcoholism and drug addiction. We don't learn from our mistakes. Normal drinkers, guys, there's about 15% of us that are wired like this in this world. It seems much higher on Iceland, I'm sure, but the truth is, if you did the math on it, it's about 15% of this island is wired genetically like us. And the rest of these knuckleheads, they can take it or leave it alone. They get a drink, they drink it, they get sick. Oh, geez, I didn't like that. And guess what? They don't ever do it again. How many of us have done it? How many of you guys ever drank until you got sick? This is good shit. It's probably some of that Skyver shit you were eating with it. I know. That's some good stuff. I know. You drank and got sick, and then you walk right back into the pub, wipe your mouth, and say, God, must have been the chicken I ate or something. And then... And then it's let me have another one. And then he's like, another beer. You know, you're not even thinking of the consequences. You know, it's just like we're not wired like normal people. It doesn't mean we're bad. I get so sick and tired of treatment centers. All they want to talk about, we have an addictive personality. No, we don't. I'm going to say this morning right now. I'm going to hit it hard tonight. There's no such thing as an addictive personality. There's some people in this room that have some character defects that, by God, you need to take to God. I guarantee you that. But alcoholism is a disease, and you either got it or you don't have it. And you can't muddy this down with saying, because I'm an alcoholic, I'm also addicted to chocolate and work and sex and everything else. That's not true. That given sufficient reason, you can stop those other things. If you can't stop, you're one of us. And most of you in this room have tried to stop a gazillion times and you weren't able to. That's because you got a disease. Y'all dig? You're going to tonight, I guarantee you. We're going to hit it hard. But this is the information right here. Physical allergy, body, mind, and spirit. And if you got that, folks, ain't nothing about your issues going to change. How many of you guys drank when everything was going great in your life? How many when you drank when everything was going shitty in your life? How many when you had a lot of money? Just leave them up. How many had no money? Great job. See, it's interesting because some of you are not raising your hand. And so we'll find out because maybe you're not even alcoholic or not. See, if your circumstances dictate whether or not you're going to drink or not, you're not one of us. And I'll tell you that right now from the podium. How many of you when you drank, when you had a great relationship, you was with somebody you loved? How many when you were dating Satan's sister? Yeah. Yeah, some beast. Yeah. We do that in Texas. We check the women, and if they got most of their teeth, you're onto something. You know, this is good. This is good shit. It's tough. But you see, I spent years, and I'll talk about it again tonight, I spent years bouncing around trying to get well by looking at my external circumstances. Chris, you drink too much because your work. Chris, you drink too much because of the women you're dating. Chris, you drink too much because of this. You drink too much because mommy and daddy. You drink too much because of... And guys, I want to tell you something, folks. That's horse shit. And you got to get straight with it. If you're blaming somebody else out there, no, I'll just put it this way, just point blank to you. Guys, I can't say that that's not true for some of you. Maybe you're drinking because of the bad thing that happened to you as a kid. If that's the case, do some good therapy and then get the fuck out of this room. Go away. Why? Because you have no sense of reference to the rest of us. It's just exactly like Peter was saying, because you're going to sit in this meeting and try to explain to somebody that if they just get in a better relationship, they would stay sober, and that could kill somebody. Because that's what we do. We just change from relationship to relationship to relationship, from place to place to place. Jeez, I mean, that's a tough thing to do in Iceland. Jeez, I mean, there's only so many places you can change to. It's going to circle your tail. This is good shit. I'm back to where I started from. Reykjavik, what the hell? I'm still drinking. And that's the little X's. That's what these little buttons are about, guys, the little issue man. And some of you guys in this room need to analyze yourself and see what you're doing here. If I'm going into a meeting and I'm talking about one of these issues, why am I talking about it? Because it's got nothing to do with my drinking. Why am I talking about it? So I can have temporary relief from that issue? What we're doing is taking up valuable recovery time when we shouldn't be talking about the steps. We should be talking about God. We should be talking about some hope for the newcomer. And if any of you are going to meetings today, and you will later this afternoon, with that little one-eyed son bitch, he said I couldn't talk about this, but I really need a place to share. Then go ahead and do it, but don't delude yourself to think that you're a part of the fellowship, because you're not. You're not a part of the program. You're not working the steps. You're not adhering to the traditions. Basically, you're a lone gun out there doing it the way you want to get it done. And that's what's killing alcoholics in this fellowship. We need to cut to the chase and talk about what's important, our primary purpose. That's it. Y'all got something you want to share?
You said it all, bro. Come on, everybody. I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. Thank Chris for a great talk, and good to see you guys, and thank you for this wonderful reception this weekend. And I wish everyone could be up this podium for a minute and look at this crowd. You guys are indescribably wonderful. Awful lot of enthusiasm and an awful lot of young faces, man. Back home in New York, when I see a crowd this young, they usually start to check you out and like, what are you going to offer me today? And So this is pretty good to see. I just wanted to add a couple of things on what Chris said, and truer words were never spoken, about our primary purpose. I'll share this from my own experience. I got sober June 23rd, 1988, and for 6 months I was hanging on for dear life, going to meetings and not drinking. All I can think about was drinking and not going to meetings. And, you know, people were telling me, just hang in there, you know, don't take the plug out of the jug. When you feel like drinking, go for a long walk, you know. Go to the gym, work out the frustration you have. You know, I had a lot of these, all these sexual issues, and they would tell me, just don't think about women right now, like I'm not supposed to think about a chick. Yeah. You know what happened to me? December 22nd, 1988, I was going to drink. And I realize now on the other side that it was really divine intervention that pulled me away from that drink, because on my own I was going to go drink. A book says whether a person could quit upon a non-spiritual basis or not depends upon whether he lost the power to choose. I lost the power of choice a long time ago, and I was going. And I was driving to Minneapolis in this broken-down car. They call them rent-a-wrecks. And here I'm driving down this avenue, and I'm looking for the first corner where guys are maybe dealing some things, or the first bar I can get into, because I'm going to go get fired up, and I know it. I'm going. And out of nowhere, I had this feeling of maybe I should try this guy. They talk about God, and I made a prayer. And I had been praying all along, but there was no, it was just doing it because I was told to do it. And I made a sincere plea to God once again, and I found myself at this gentleman's house in Minnesota. And I shared with this guy, Joe, I says, these are my dramas of life, and I want to go drinking. Christmas is just a couple of days away, and my life is falling apart, and I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. What's this about? And he asked me a couple of questions, and our book talks about perhaps we disturbed him on the question of alcoholism. I was disturbed many, many times in Alcoholics Anonymous, and currently still am, when I start to run the show. But this guy asked me, where are you with God in the 12 steps? And I thought, and I says, well, when do you start the steps? He says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. And he disturbed me on a question of alcoholism. And as much as he got me angry, as much anger as I felt at that particular moment, I knew he spoke truth. Because he was living example of what was going on in his life with this book. See, the greatest convincer for me was not what you said, by watching you live. With my own eyes, how I saw you live. And here was a gentleman like many others in Minnesota who were coming to meetings sharing about a solution. And if they talked about any problems, they talked about the solution to the problem. So me, who's a schmuck sitting in the back, would say, I went through that, now I know how to get out. They weren't just unloading about the tough day they had. They were sharing solution, solution, solution. And then I would see them in a diner. I would see them down at the park. I would see them socializing. They would invite me into their homes, and I would see how they were living. And that convinced me more than any words. A book talks about having a message of depth and weight. When I saw how you acted and you lived this, when you took this into your home, your occupation affair, the words you gave me had depth and weight now. Because not only you were armed with the facts, you were a man with a real solution. You were a drinker like me. But I saw how you lived. I might as well share this too. Back home, we have people coming in with other addictions. Now, I can say this from my own experience. I try to share this solution as best God allows me to. So I have no problem saying what I'm about to say. But what we do is we lovingly bring people into Alcoholics Anonymous, all walks of life. And we don't lovingly guide them to the places they need to be. For example, I'm an alcoholic. I'm a real alcoholic. I did some other substances. When a crackhead comes in to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, my job is not to say, stick around till you identify with one of the speakers. Guess what? It ain't going to happen. I'm going to kill him by saying that to him. What I do is lovingly guide him to a Cocaine Anonymous meeting where he's around people of his type. See, our book talks about the real alcoholic of our type. I'm not a crackhead of that type. I have no idea what it's like to be like that, to have that sort of addiction, to have that whole thing. So I lovingly guide them or take them to a CA meeting, and then they get hooked up. Or are they looking to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and look to get some attention? Maybe they can find a girlfriend and go about their merry way and take up 10 minutes at a meeting talking about smoking crack while another drunk is dying in a corner, not identifying. There's a great story in a grapevine. A few years back, an old timer comes into his first AA meeting. And the speaker gets up there with 7 years, and he's running his stuff. And he's talking about drugs at this AA meeting, and the old timer leaves the meeting, and he's standing in the parking lot against his car, and a guy came up to him. He says, what's wrong? He says, I don't know what else to do. He said, I'm a drunk. I don't belong in AA's. How come? He said, I never did drugs. And for me, that caught me right here because that's an awfully powerful statement. Some other experiences I had was people would talk about make 90 meetings in 90 days. And I'm still looking. I've searched this big book to find 90 meetings in 90 days. Chris talked about the early years and the statistics of how successful we were. They're not so good right now. Back then, they couldn't make 90 meetings in 90 days. You see, they didn't say do a step a year. That's another one. Or this other great one, do the AA waltz, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, and you're out the door. What changed? What changed? How come every treatment center has their own 12-step manual, and we do that instead of the book that gives us a short, clear-cut solution to find God, to get right with God? I was in Alcoholics Anonymous in and out for years. I tried therapy, I tried psychiatrist, I've gone to religious people, and I still kept getting drunk. And then I would come here, and they would say, put the plug in a jug, just keep coming back. Well, people with good hearts, but never giving me a solution. And I remember one time feeling like, well, what do I do? Because Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work for me. Now where do I go? What do I do now? I'm not hearing what I was to hear in 1988. When I was moved to Minnesota, and people were told me I was suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience would conquer, that I tried every other thing. And they told me the solution was in the first portion of this book. See, in chapter 2, Agnostics, it says, this book will enable you to find a power which will solve your problem. You follow the directions, you suit up and show up. Circumstances bring us to a place of willingness to do anything, any lengths. And we better have a sponsor who's a real alcoholic if I'm a real alcoholic. And then we follow directions in this book, and this book will take me to a power which will solve my problem. All I have to do is follow directions. Am I willing or not? That's a yes or no answer. And I better really be praying for a sponsor who's a real drunk. I can't stress that enough. And I'll close with this. If you're here and you're new and you're looking for that sponsor and you don't know who to ask, my experience, because it's happened to me a few times, is go to God first, even if you don't believe. Father, put a teacher in my life. And he will. He'll provide you with someone who has a real answer, who's on with the facts. This is life and death. Sometimes we're in here a little bit of time, and we forget about the devastation that this illness causes. The life a real alcoholic lives, and the people we damage on the way in here. And I need to have someone who's passing this message on. So, you know, you can go to a meeting now, and you're going to piss people off, and we're going to be in a minority. But guess what? The majority is getting drunk. The majority is don't drink and go to meetings and coming in and out of here and talking about everything else but the solution. The minority in Alcoholics Anonymous is in this book, and they've recovered, as I am this morning. Thanks.
Did anyone, we got a few minutes, and then in questions on this primary purpose business? Any questions from the deal, and we can answer those, and then we'll go take a smoke? Everybody got it? God, y'all are great. I mentioned one thing, and we'll let you out real quick, because sometimes I get misunderstood. We hit this podium pretty hard, guys, about this thing about primary purpose and about this wine. And, you know, all of the issues that are in my life today, I need to talk about. And Peter alluded to it, and I need to make sure that all of you guys understand. If you've got something going on in your life that's driving you nuts, I'm not saying don't talk about it. Talk about it. Come early. Stay late. You know, like the old adage, you know, I was going to wear my Denny's shirt and I forgot it, left it in the state. Go to Denny's. They have Denny's in Iceland? What's the equivalent? Oh, shoot. No wonder y'all are all drunk. You don't have a place to go. Go find some place to talk. Go drink a coffee and sit and visit and talk to the guy. I mean, people in the fellowship are there to help you. That's the fellowship part of this thing. It's you're there for. But just for a stinking hour during the day, guys, can we just stay focused on God and the steps? Can we just stay focused on the solution to the problem? That's all we're trying to say. Everybody's got problems, and that's what we need to talk about that. Just not here. Let's go smoke.